This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For over a decade, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect research to practice, sponsoring independent third-party research on a broad range of public management topics, and issues important to public managers. On December 9, 2010, the Telework Enhancement Act of 2010 was signed into law by President Obama. The new law substantially changes the status of telework throughout the government. Instead of each agency developing its telework policies and procedures, the legislation sets forth a government-wide framework, which both endorses and encourages the use of telework throughout the government. Telework has been touted as a winning strategy for government. A study by the Telework Research Network claims potential savings for the federal government of nearly $3.8 billion as a result of reduced real estate costs, electricity savings, reduced absenteeism, and reduced employee turnover. Today, we will explore the expanding use of telework in the federal government. We will focus on such questions as, how has the Telework Enhancement Act of 2010 changed the way government does business? What are some of the key challenges and risks of advancing telework in the federal government? And how has technology made telework more of a reality? We will discuss these questions and more with Professor Scott Obermeier, author of the recent IBM Center report, Implementing Telework, Lessons Learned from Four Federal Agencies. Welcome, Professor. Late 20th century technology has revolutionized the workplace, and the 21st century workplace is evolving even further. Computers, remote connectivity, voice and electronic communications, paperless work processes, and other innovations make information and work increasingly mobile. So, Professor, what is telework? And perhaps you can describe the recent trend and rise in telework nationwide.
I can tell you how telework is defined by my working definition for the report. Telework is defined as any work that's conducted away from the primary workplace, either part-time or full-time. It doesn't have to be full-time. Which is facilitated or aided in some way by information and telecommunications technology. So that is to say, for example, I'm a teleworker myself. My office is in Flint, Michigan, but I work from my home in South Dakota. I have video teleconferencing capabilities on my desktop. I have Skype, which is another video teleconferencing capability. I have telecommunications, and I have, believe it or not, fiber optic cable to my house out in the middle of nowhere, which makes it possible for me to do almost anything that I could possibly do in the office. And so that's the basic definition and an example of telework. As far as trends go, teleworking is really on the rise nationally in both the federal government and in industry. Some of the notables in telework are Hewlett-Packard. IBM is probably the largest proponent of teleworker currently in industry. A good percentage of their workforce teleworks at least 2 days a week. And starting in about 2005, telecommuting or telework has risen from about 12.4 million to 17.2 million in 2008, which is my latest data. According to some figures, telework has also risen in the federal government, kind of on its own. So the trend is upward. As long as telework continues to serve the mission of the organization, in which it is used, I think it'll continue to trend upward.
Professor, you mentioned the federal government. That's a nice segue. I'd like to talk particularly about telework in the federal government. I understand the adoption of it by federal employees has slowed in recent years. According to the U.S. Office of Personnel Management, only about 102,000 federal employees are teleworking as of 2008, and that figure represents only a fraction of the 1.2 million who are estimated to be eligible to do so. So first, what can you tell us about the Telework Enhancement Act of 2010? What was the government like before the passage of this legislation? And how will it substantially change the status of telework throughout the government?
Well, before the passage of the act, the federal government, each agency was kind of on its own. There was a general directive to take a look at telework, and that actually established, I think it was in 2001, established the need for telework coordinators at each agency and set some guidelines for telework. But the policies that govern telework were the responsibility of the individual agency. And so policy was really all over the place. And as a result, I think telework met with mixed success in various agencies. Some did it very well. The interviews that I did for my case studies in this report, for example, highlight four agencies that, as it turns out, did telework very well. There are others that didn't do so well with telework. You know, they kind of muddled through and had a small increase in telework or even a decrease in telework in the 2000s. The Telework Enhancements Act of 2010 really centralizes the responsibility for setting telework policy. It requires each agency to establish the policy under which all eligible employees the agency can be authorized to telework, determine each employee's eligibility for telework, and make sure that each employee in the agency knows that whether they're eligible for telework. By doing this in a centralized way, the federal government's putting more emphasis on the fact that telework is becoming the way that we're doing business in the Fed, in many agencies, and will continue to do so for a number of reasons, which I'll hopefully talk about or touch on later.
Professor Obermeier, you described the way it was in the federal government prior to the authorization of this new legislation. I'd like to shift the discussion to the government-wide aspects of the Telework Act of 2010. Would you elaborate on the roles played by both the Office of Personnel Management, OPM, and the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, respectively? What role do these agencies play in the development of new policies and overall support of telework in the federal government?
Well, these agencies have been given by this Telework Enhancements Act specific responsibilities for establishing policy and guidance. The Office of Personnel Management, for example, they are tasked to provide each agency with guidance on things like pay and leave for teleworkers, what happens when agencies close, performance management, establishing official work sites, directives on recruitment and retention and how telework can be used for a recruitment and retention tool, how, you know, general HR types of things, how performance management should be carried out, how you can use telework as an accommodation for employees with disabilities. So there are a number of responsibilities that they have. They also are tasked to consult with FEMA, GSA, and NARA on records management and preservation of records related to the measurement of performance and so forth with telework. OPM is also supposed to maintain a central telework website. There is currently a telework website for the federal government called telework.gov, which is very useful. This kind of makes that official. OPM is also tasked with researching how telework is done in the private sector and trying to adopt some best practices from there with respect to how the Fed should conduct business when using telework. And also, OPM is tasked with outcomes, looking at outcomes of telework, including any potential cost savings and looking at the cost-benefit analysis and so forth. On the other hand, the Office of Management and Budget, they are primarily responsible for security guidelines, looking at, you know, coordinating with agencies like DISA and NSA. They have 6 months, basically, to ensure that the guidelines are in place for adequate protection of data, to make sure that data that is sensitive or otherwise protected is, in fact, protected for people that are working remotely. And also, they are tasked with the responsibility for looking at computer purchases. General policy toward telework shifts the way that most agencies purchase computers, and OMB is responsible for establishing guidelines there. And what I mean by that is going from desktop computers to laptops. Laptops obviously can be transported home by the teleworker from the office, whereas desktops require you to back your car up to the door and load a lot of equipment and so forth. It's just not practical. So the emphasis is going to be switching from desktop provision and purchasing to laptop provision, which, by the way, may actually drive down the cost of laptops. So that's the responsibilities of each of those organizations.
Professor, employers that have adopted flexible workplace practices cite many economic benefits, and there's a small but growing research literature assessing the impact of flexible workplace practices on both workers and employers. Your recent IBM Center report, Implementing Telework, Lessons Learned from Four Federal Agencies, has contributed to this research on the benefits of telework. So I'd like you to identify some of the key benefits to organizations that your research has outlined.
Well, to an organization, some of the key benefits are, I guess the number one is continuity of operations. We all remember the great snowstorm of last year and the other great snowstorms that are yet to come of this year. Federal government organizations that that engage in that have a practice of teleworking never really closed during those snowstorms. Organizations like DISA, they stayed open because, you know, most of their workforce was capable of working from home and continued to work even though the federal government was essentially closed. So continuity of operations is a big one. Another big benefit for an organization is recruitment and retention. You would be surprised, perhaps, or maybe not, how big of a tool teleworking is in recruiting new employees and retaining existing employees. More often than not, employees take a look at this particular benefit over money as being a favorable in considering whether or not to accept a particular job. So I think that those two benefits are the biggies. Improved employee productivity is another one. Reduced health care costs and reduced numbers of sick days taken. Teleworkers, such as myself and others in the Fed, tend to work on, even if you're not feeling that well, because if you're working from home, you don't risk making anybody else sick, and you don't necessarily need to take a sick day. You can save that for some catastrophic illness if it occurs. There's also potential for real estate cost savings for those organizations that close facilities because they can distribute their workforce around the country. Also, you can expand the talent pool. When you're recruiting people, looking at a complete country full of qualified talent that you can hire and not have to relocate them expands the talent pool in such a way that you can try and gather the brightest and the best for your own workforce. So those are the primary benefits for organizations.
Professor, you make an important distinction, and that's a great point. What are some of the specific benefits to employees and society in general? And would you elaborate on these benefits?
Well, for employees, you have fewer sick days. Some of the same benefits for the organization accrue to the employee as well. Work-life balance, for example, is improved. People can manage their time between their home life and work by cutting out their commuting for example. So right away you have, in D.C., the average commute is 1 to 2 hours. So right away you have 1 to 2 hours added on to each end of the workday. You can get home to take the kids to soccer practice because you're already there. When work is over, you can seamlessly continue into home life. For example, people with young families, teleworkers often will take some time out in the late afternoon for the family and then continue working late into the night after the kids have gone to bed. So this allows a great deal of flexibility on the part of the employee. Cost savings from commuting are huge. And as anybody, I used to commute in from Front Royal, Virginia, to Fairfax. And even when gas prices were low, that costs a fortune. And this is money right back in the employee's pocket that they do not have to spend when they don't have to come to the office. Employees, generally speaking, are more satisfied, so employee satisfaction goes up. For society, of course, we have the reductions in carbon emissions, greenhouse gases. We have on-site energy savings with lower costs to the taxpayer. And in fact, this does increase demand for some goods and services in some sectors for buying new computer equipment associated with teleworking, although that one's a little bit of a stretch, I suppose. Laptop companies, when telework really takes off, are going to make even more money than they're making now. So there are a number of benefits out there, and all of these are not to be underestimated, I believe.
Professor, your report does a terrific job of illustrating many of the substantive benefits. Investment in telework is not without its risks, and your research identifies the challenges and some of the risks associated with such a transformation. Would you outline some of the key challenges and risks associated with telework?
Well, I see the risks falling into a number of specific categories. There are technology risks, operational risks, social risks, and some organizational risks. In the area of technology risks, when establishing a telework program, if you don't have the proper technology and infrastructure in place, it can actually impact productivity negatively. When you think about having a telework policy, you also have to have a telework technology policy to accompany that. It's also possible that you'll have technology failures, which can, you know, happen anywhere. It could as easily happen in the workplace, I suppose, as in the home. But there is another point of failure, which is the teleworker's own connection to the internet and their own telecommunications capabilities. If that fails, then, of course, there can be operational issues. But generally speaking, those issues in technology are no greater than they are in the workplace itself. Of course, my question to managers would be, well, if someone is sitting at their desk, how do you know they're working there? And the answer to that usually is, well, I don't really, I just can see them. Well, blind presence is no substitute for measurable productivity. And so having active management practices that set goals and so forth can mitigate this risk, but it is a risk, and it does happen that underperforming, that teleworkers can become complacent and underperform, but there are ways around that. In the area of social risks, you know, it's possible that teleworkers will go overboard the other way in terms of work-life balance and end up, since they're working at home, working all the time. I guess that in the short run could be good for the organization. But in the long run, that's really not good for the person, and so work-life balance has to be managed in some way. Also, sometimes you can have a risk that teleworkers will get a bad reaction from people that are stuck in the office. So there are certain numbers of people that that are not eligible for whatever reason for telework. And if they're not eligible for telework, they can resent those who are eligible for telework. And it can have some, you know, have something to do with them personally, but more often than not, it has to do with their job. Their job is such that they must be in the office in order to do their job. So this is a risk you run with a little bit of resentment within the team. Organizational risks, lack of face-to-face communication, lack of teleworker visibility to management. You know, if you're out of sight, out of mind, it's a problem, and it can be a risk to the organization that teleworkers become isolated and so forth. And as I mentioned before, one of the biggest risks organizationally when you're trying to put in telework programs is the problem of management resistance. And again, it comes back to this: if I can't see them, how do I know they're working? So this can also be a problem.
So, Professor, what are some of the mitigation strategies you've outlined in your report that sort of ameliorate these risks?
Well, of course, for technology risk, if you're having a program of telework, you need to have a technology plan and then put in place in the budget in a formal way provisions to provide the technology, the backup, the help desk, and the training that teleworkers will need in order to effectively perform as teleworkers from a technology perspective. Doing that, especially having a help desk that's available during working hours, or better still, 24/7, where teleworkers can call and get help with any issue that they're having from a technology perspective, is very useful. From an operational perspective, I spoke of teleworker underperformance. Well, if management is active and goals are set and performance is measured, and there is a clear telework agreement in place with clear expectations on both the part of management and the teleworker as to what is expected of them, this risk really almost goes away. Because, in fact, as long as somebody is meeting their performance goals, it really doesn't matter if they're sitting at their desk 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, or whatever. The goal is what's important. Their performance is what is important. And active management measurement is what it should be important to the organization. Social risks. We certainly don't want teleworkers to seem isolated, and there's no reason for them to be so. If there is an office meeting, there's no reason why you can't put a PC or a laptop or a teleconferencing system in the environment and have the teleworkers call in so that they're at every meeting that all the rest of the employees are at, and that they are seen and are an integral part of the team. I know that my boss in Flint calls me every Monday, and we have a Skype conversation for a few minutes and talk about things. And also, I have a weekly performance plan that I submit to them. And these kinds of devices make this isolation also a non-issue. The real key to minimizing social risks, and including this work-life balance problem, is, again, performance monitoring and measurement. People can overperform as well as underperform, and if it's clear that people are working too much and heaven forbid, getting too much done, you know, they need to be managed, and the manager needs to say, look, you're doing a great job, but it's time to take some time off and do something else. Likewise, with operational risks, management resistance can be overcome by training primarily. But also, if you have a training program that trains managers on what to expect from teleworkers, on how to manage teleworkers, it turns out it usually makes them a better manager, and they end up managing all employees in a more objective, performance-oriented way. Also, managers are encouraged to try telework. Give it a try and see how it works yourself. Many managers have been convinced, and resistance has been overcome by the act of having them be teleworkers for a while. Pilot programs are also effective, where you can try telework with a few employees and have a viable demonstration that, in fact, it works and that the teleworkers can be managed and can be productive. Also, this helps in dissipating management resistance.
How are federal agencies pursuing telework? We will explore this and more when this special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. How can government cut costs and improve performance? What are federal agencies doing to be more transparent, participatory, and innovative? How is the Navy strengthening its information dominance for the 21st century? What is the U.S. Postal Service doing to reduce its carbon footprint and green its operations? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. My guest today is Professor Scott Obermeier, author of the IBM Center Report, Implementing Telework, Lessons Learned from Four Federal Agencies. Professor Obermeier, your recent report for the IBM Center on telework in the federal government does a terrific job of describing the technological, social, operational, and management risks that public managers face in implementing a telework strategy. You also offer compelling case studies of four cutting-edge federal agencies and how they addressed issues and successfully implemented telework in their organizations. So I'd like to transition right now to some of those case studies. You did a wonderful job outlining the history, benefits, and challenges that are overcome by four specific agencies. I'd like to focus on your first case study, the Defense Information Systems Agency, or DISA. Would you give us a brief history of telework at this agency?
Sure. Telework at DISA started in about 2001 after the passage of Public Law 106-346, which had the mandate I alluded to earlier about establishing a policy under which people could telework. And this was mostly oriented toward telecommuting back at that time, which is basically working at home. Although some of the technical provisions for telework were already in place. The provisions in that act applied to 25% of the federal workforce and then added another 25% in subsequent years. So in 2001, when DISA started, there were about 50 people teleworking with a maximum allowable telework period of one day per pay period or one out of 10 work days every 2 weeks. This was a preliminary program for DISA, which lasted for about 4 years, from 2001 to 2005. And then in 2005, DISA did an employee survey about telework. They found out some of the issues with telework, such as work-life quality, communications, management, and leadership. And based on the recommendations of those that were reviewing this, the telework program was expanded from one per pay period to 2 days per week, which, you know, quadrupled the number of days that people could then telework. This was approved in December 2005 and put in place in January 2006. In early 2006, then, Jack Pankowski, who was Manpower, Personnel, and Security Director at DISA, convened a team that he called the SWAT team to go out and look at telework and establish policies agency-wide. And he gave people 60 days to come back with the recommendations. And a senior IT person was involved, as well as Aaron Glover, who was the person that I interviewed at DISA for this report, led these teams. And in 60 days, the recommendations were put forward, and the telework program, the new program, was put in place in March of 2006. And from then, telework has just done nothing but expanded. There are about 3,500 approved applications for teleworking in DISA, which is quite an expansion over the 50 teleworkers in the initial program in 2001. And currently, workers at DISA can telework up to 3 days per week, which is significant.
Professor, what are some of the challenges faced by this agency in instituting telework, and how did it overcome those challenges?
Well, one challenge with DISA, of course, being a defense organization, they're particularly concerned with security. And so they're worried about what kind of equipment, what kind of access to data that teleworking employees are provided. And so the way they overcame this is requiring that all employees who telework must use government-furnished equipment, which is equipped for security and with the appropriate network cards and lockdown hard drives. And they also went to laptops so that people weren't transitioning from work computers to home computers and risking a sensitive data being transmitted there. 90% of all laptops or all personal computers that were issued to disemployees then in 2006, it went to 90% with only 10% desktops. They also have electronic signatures using a common access card that allows them to access sensitive data from wherever they happen to be. According to Aaron Glover, the notion of management resistance, which was also a problem at DISA when telework first started, was one of the ways they overcame management resistance was from the top down. Senior management at DISA, including members of their senior executive service staff and their director, were firm telework supporters. And so they emphasized, by their knowledge from industry, this notion of managing performance, measuring performance, and setting goals, and making sure that employees know what is expected of them, and they pushed it from the top down. Aaron Glover mentioned this notion of people sitting at their desk and management resistance based on the fact that if a worker isn't at their desk, how do I know they're working? Through this setting of performance goals and these establishment of programs for performance measurement and making sure that everyone knows what the goals are, how they're measured, how they'll be evaluated, this was fairly easily overcome. While some jobs are easy to measure, I mean, you know, if you're working in a factory and you're putting bolts in a hole or something like that, it's easy to count how many bolts you've put in these holes over a period of an hour. Well, when you're working for customers and doing things like trying to establish requirements for a software system, for example, it's much more difficult to measure performance there, but it's not impossible. You look at quality of work products, you look at outcomes, you look at customer satisfaction, and all of these things can contribute to performance measurement. And management seeing this and seeing tangible results of this performance measurement and goal setting pretty much overcame management resistance, and it's almost, according to them, gone now.
Professor, given the research you performed, what are some of the key success factors identified in the case studies?
Well, there are a number of them. For DISA, for example, they learned that top management support was absolutely key. If top management clearly communicated to middle management and on down what was required in terms of telework, this support was invaluable in the success of their telework program. The other thing that was really important was training. Training was absolutely essential, and training sessions for managers as well as teleworkers are still ongoing at DISA and will continue to do so. Initiative, as opposed to some of the other agencies I interviewed, Mr. Glover at DISA considered initiative to be critical. In other words, the philosophy of let's get on with it. There were other agencies that had pilot studies and studies of the pilot studies and studies of the pilot studies before they actually proceeded to put telework policy in place. And it was DISA's opinion that it was much better to make a decision that you're going to go, measure what you need to measure, and then get on with it. And that initiative was very good. And another key success factor for DISA was they have an automated application process, which is rather unique among organizations in the federal government that support telework. That is, if you want to apply to be a teleworker at DISA, you can go online, fill out the application online, and there's a complete traceability of where that application went, where the approval currently sits, with whose management authority. It's easy to track where your application for telework is. And as a result of that, it's also easy to measure who's teleworking, under what circumstances, and how well they're doing. And so they thought that that was pretty key to their success as well.
One of your other case studies focuses on the telework efforts at the Office of Patent and Trademark. Would you elaborate on its efforts to successfully implement telework?
The Patent and Trademark Office had some unique challenges and some things that made telework easier. For example, with them, patent attorneys, examine certain number of patent applications, and performance measurement for them was very, very easy. You were supposed to examine so many patent applications a week. If you did that, you'd met your performance goals. In a way, Patent and Trademark had it easier for some jobs, but just as difficult time for others. But what I really wanted to emphasize with respect to Patent and Trademark is their comment about the Telework Enhancements Act of 2010. Right now, officially, for most federal agencies, the duty station of the employee is the office in which the agency resides. And so when teleworkers need to go to the home office, it's at their expense. And so this almost makes it imperative that they at least live in the general area of the agency in which they work, which kind of makes it difficult if you want to have face-to-face meetings. Well, the Telework Enhancements Act allows agencies to, on a test basis, define a duty station in a person's home or at a telework center, and then allows the federal agency to have people come into the home office for critical meetings at government expense. And this is something new. And this is something that Patent and Trademark Office is very excited about, because when I mentioned before that recruitment and retention as being as expanding the talent pool that they can draw from, for Patent and Trademark Office that uses a lot of attorneys and a lot of highly skilled patent people working on their patents and trademark applications and doing searches and so forth, this allows them to draw basically from anywhere, defining a duty station in the person's home, in the potential employee's home, and then if they are required to come in for meetings or orientation, allows them to pay for that at government expense, which is pretty exciting. For me personally, for the first 3 years that I was teleworking for Baker College, it was at my expense. It took me almost 4 years, but now Baker College will pay for my quarterly visits to Flint, which is very attractive and makes a big difference in my longevity at a place like that. So I'm very happy about that. And I think that Patent and Trademark Office, for similar reasons, is also very excited about that possibility.
In fact, PTO is one of the largest telework programs in the federal government because it established sound telework policies that led to maximum participation, abundant program support, and aggressive top-level leadership. In part because of its telework program, PTO has been recognized by Business Week magazine as one of the best places in America to launch a career and to round out one's career, and by Families magazine as one of the best places in the Washington, D.C. area to work if you have a family. What are some of the ways federal agencies can better implement telework? We will explore this and so much more when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. This is the Center This Week, highlighting the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness, brought to you by the IBM Center for the Business of Government. I'm Michael Keegan, Managing Editor of the Business of Government magazine. The Center This Week is our opportunity to inform and, most importantly, to invite you, our listeners, to use the IBM Center for the Business of Government as your resource, a how-to resource for improving government effectiveness at the state, local, and federal level. Today's This Center This Week is Beyond Watson, Deep QA's applicability to the public sector. IBM's Watson is far more than a Jeopardy contestant or a winner, and it promises to be much more than a marketing gimmick or simply a fad. At first glance, Watson, and answering questions for a Hollywood game show, seems quite removed from the serious work that government performs. But there are significant and promising parallels to government work. David Shepler from the IBM research team and Watson project manager joins us on This Center This Week to explore how this technology can assist public managers today. David, how did this emergent technology and the game show Jeopardy come together? Can you give us an overview of how that happened?
The genesis of the project really began back in Ken Jennings' run on Jeopardy. An IBM executive, a guy named Charles Lickle, who was the vice president overseeing this team that eventually built Deep QA or Watson. He was in a bar watching Ken Jennings run and thought, geez, I wonder if we could build a system that could kind of take on this task of playing the game of Jeopardy. In 2007, David Ferrucci stepped forward, the principal investigator of Deep QA, or the lead research scientist, formed a small team and began to tackle it. Probably a year or two thereafter, they recognized that the system was on a trajectory to be competitive, and we decided to approach Jeopardy seriously with the idea of potentially having a competition. So the system continued to be developed, tweaked, improved over a four-year period. We put it through a really extensive kind of real-world game testing regime. Ultimately, we established kind of our final record of achievement as of last November, when we were able to beat Jeopardy Tournament of Champions semifinalists and finalists. We brought in about 40 of that caliber of player. We conducted 55 games, and Watson was able to win or place first in 71% of them. So we really consider that to be our formal record of achievement of the Jeopardy challenge task in Watson.
David, I understand that the analytics technology underpinning Watson can deliver information efficiently and, more importantly, in everyday terms. This makes it easy for government agencies to find that critical knowledge, which is buried in huge volumes of natural language content. Would you tell us more about the underlying technology, the Deep QA, that is Watson?
Deep QA is a bundle of deep analytics that this team has developed. It applies the latest advances in natural language processing, machine learning, knowledge representation and reasoning. All these terms are ones often used in the kind of computer science discipline. But there are a whole bunch of very advanced algorithms in these areas that, when wrapped together, can provide extraordinary accuracy and understanding of confidence on the part of the system to produce natural language answers in response to a natural language question or query. You know, analytics broadly is about trying to manage in a smart way the data of an organization. In this context, we're talking about how do you deal with and take advantage of a large body of natural language data, right? So we're not talking about structured databases necessarily. We're talking about content as a human might engage it. So in this case, we're talking about a specific kind of capability, text analytics, and to be able to manage that, to be able to find the content that is of interest to you in a very human way, in using natural language.
While the computing system won't replace human beings, it can give us a view of how technology can help us make better decisions and improve how government helps its citizens. What makes government such a natural fit for this type of innovation, and would you give us an example of where this technology is useful in the public sector?
Sure. Anything that provides this level of analytics and depth might really allow them to kind of manage this data deluge problem that all institutions, in particular the very large institutions, have to deal with. And government is certainly no exception to that. In fact, perhaps in many respects, their problems are greater than most. So they see that a tool like this or a capability like this might be really useful. You could imagine all sorts of applications in this space, in the government space. I can tell you that one of the ones we're very, very much interested in is pursuing something in healthcare, perhaps a tool that allows a medical provider to deal with large volumes of medical information to help come up with differential diagnoses for a patient. So imagine instead of a Jeopardy question being presented to the system, instead you're offering the system a set of presenting symptoms, perhaps medical history, again expressed in natural language, and the system would be asked to sort of read all the journal articles and textbooks and medical information in its data corpus to come up with a ranked list of differential diagnoses. And the other aspect of that that's sort of interesting and different from Jeopardy is we would very much imagine a dialogue occurring. See, in the game of Jeopardy, there is no dialogue. A question is posed, and Watson has to come back with an answer, and then it's done, and it moves on to the next query. In the case of medicine, we do imagine a dialogue where The provider sort of offers the system the information I described. It comes back with a list of differential diagnoses with, by the way, some supporting evidence, references to specific journal articles or other evidence in the medical history of that particular patient to support why the system believes that perhaps this diagnosis is more probable than this one. And that medical provider can say, that's interesting. I like what you're bringing me here. Now, what if you gave more weight to this particular piece of evidence? Or I don't like that piece of evidence. I don't think that's really relevant here. I want to discard that. Now, Deep QA system, what is your new findings with regards to those diagnoses? And that's sort of how we imagine some sort of medical application looking.
David, it's truly the breadth and complexity of information that federal agencies must navigate, and the healthcare example is a wonderful example. That's where analytics becomes a differentiator in deciphering data and pointing to outcomes. David Shepler from IBM Research and the Watson Project Manager, thanks for joining me on today's The Center This Week.
Well, thank you, Michael. I really appreciate your time today.
For the IBM Center for the Business of Government, I'm Michael Keegan, and this has been The Center This Week. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Navy doing to strengthen its information dominance for the 21st century? What are federal agencies doing to be more transparent, participatory, and innovative? And how are federal agencies leveraging technology to improve mission effectiveness? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. The Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine provides insights from those who lead. Hear from Richard Spires, leading Homeland Security's technology effort, Dr. Bobby Braun, advancing NASA's space technology program, Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett, strengthening the U.S. Navy's information dominance, and Sam Polcrano, coordinating U.S. Postal Service sustainability efforts. All of this and so much more in the Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. The IBM Center for the Business of Government has chronicled stories of large, complex organizational transformations, but it is also important to tell the stories of frontline leaders making a difference on a smaller scale. Pick up Transforming State Government Services Through Process Improvement, a case study of Louisiana by Dr. Vicki Grant, and find out more. This report is a first-hand story of using common sense management to improve and redesign a vital element of human service delivery. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. My guest today is Professor Scott Obermeier, author of the IBM Center report, Implementing Telework, Lessons Learned from Four Federal Agencies. Professor, your report outlines 10 key recommendations for public managers who are looking to implement the requirements of the Telework Enhancement Act of 2010. Perhaps you can provide us with an overview of some of the core recommendations. For instance, what are your recommendations for establishing plans and policies and for managing in a telework environment?
By the Act, all agencies need to develop a comprehensive telework plan by July of this year. This comprehensive telework plan needs to spell out what is expected of teleworkers, what the teleworker can expect from the organization, which jobs within the organization qualify for telework and which don't, what the training plan is for the agency, how performance evaluation will be conducted, and what the continuing education requirements for each teleworker are. I think that that particular recommendation is kind of fixed by the Act, so agencies won't have much of a choice. They have to do this, and these are all great things to do. My recommendation, based on the case studies, is that outside of the basic requirements of the Act, agencies should develop clear and written telework policies and telework agreements for employees. Productivity is better, work-life balance is better, performance measurement is better when these plans are clearly written and understood by everybody who is impacted by them. And agency training for managers and employees involved in telework should be put at a fairly high priority and put into place prior to telework commencing. Managers need to be trained in how to actively manage and measure performance employees need to be trained in how to telework, how to manage the fact that they're at home and the TV's in the other room, and they need to focus on their tasks and on what they're supposed to be doing rather than interacting. On the other hand, you know, as long as people meet their performance goals, I don't think agencies should be too concerned about what people do during the workday, as long as, like I said, their work is getting done and it's of good quality. As far as managing in a telework environment, one of the recommendations that's most important is for agencies to develop performance measures that are effective and reasonably measure what is expected of the teleworker in terms of work products. So, again, it's not hours sitting at a chair behind a desk. It's work products. It's customer satisfaction. It's interactions with coworkers. It's interactions with the team and so forth that should be emphasized. I think that covers actually two of my recommendations. Like I said, it's results that need to be measured and not the process, really. And so managers need to be trained on the concept of measuring results as opposed to trying to measure the amount of time somebody is spending doing something.
Professor, expanding telework and other flexible work arrangements within the federal government is both enabled and driven by advances in technology. What are some of your recommendations for providing technology to teleworkers?
Well, I think that, as I mentioned before, technology policy needs to be established up front, whether telework supporting agencies are going to allow people to use their home equipment or whether they need to provide government-furnished equipment. If they need to provide government-furnished equipment, the equipment suite that they decide on for the teleworker should really be universal for the entire organization. Economies of scale can be obtained by purchasing this way. And also ease of maintenance, ease of support can be obtained by using a suite if government-furnished equipment is going to be required. If agencies are going to allow people to use their own equipment at home, this is fine. I don't see a problem with that as long as security issues are addressed. And in fact, allowing people to use their home computers can really boost performance because individuals that are using their home computers are familiar with their own setups. They are able to be comfortable with the way their computer is set up and so forth. Not that they can't be comfortable with a GFE laptop as well. The final recommendation on technology is that agencies need to be mindful of security, and they can't be lax about these kinds of issues in protecting data, whether it's personal or classified data and so forth. And in fact, most teleworkers who work with classified data cannot telework currently. They're is some talk about establishing at least one classified telework center in the D.C. metro area, in the suburbs somewhere, that teleworkers who work with classified can go to and cut down on their commutes. However, this currently has not been established. Network access cards, password protection, not allowing printouts from home equipment on certain data, and other provisions of security need to be attended to when technology policy is being written.
Keeping on this topic as we close our conversation, what is the role of technology in making telework a reality and a success? And more importantly, what does the future hold for telework in the federal government?
The role of technology in telework in general has been huge. In fact, now, with the applications that we consider common, like Skype and WebEx for teleconferencing and so forth, the home desktop, especially if